Everybody's billing $2,000 an hour. How are you going to get anything done? And my point, from the get-go, I said, if you, and I looked at our lawyer, I said, if you look at that phone one more time, I will take it away from you. 10, 15 minutes into it, I confess. Dunked it in a glass of Diet Coke. And then I said to number two person, next time you look at your laptop, I'll take it away from you. Well, I did take it, throw it across the room in the trash can. The meeting became very efficient.
Digital detox secrets. How do you reclaim your productivity, reclaim your life? This is a really big topic. Stephen J. Manning is with me again today. Quite excited about talking with him. He always shares massive value from his career. He built a $1 billion marketing business back in the 1980s. And since then, he's worked with numerous Fortune 500s, Fortune 5s, 20s, etc. And we are really going to share some great value with you here today. I mean, it's lovely to see you, Steve, as usual.
See you.
Yeah, I mean, when it comes to digital detox, I've been kind of wasting time recently. I'm not going to lie. I've been wasting time. I've really struggled to actually remove myself from technology. And today I just had enough. So today I'll give you an example of what I did. I basically went outside and I moved some dirt. I took a big shovel and I dug some dirt up in my garden and I moved it. And that took me about an hour. And then when I came back in, I got my journal out and I started making some notes of what I'm stressed about, what I want to achieve, why I'm not achieving it, etc. And I decided, you know what? This is really valuable information. And this can be achieved by doing any activity that you enjoy, as long as it's not a device. And I haven't quite decided if a television actually counts as a digital detox or not. I haven't quite decided, is a television a device or is it not?
I don't think there's anything wrong with watching some mindless television. Okay, because we are bombarded all day long, all night long, if we marginally allow ourselves to be, don't have to be immersed as you and I are, bombarded by so much content, by so much heavy stuff. And I've come to the conclusion that there's nothing wrong with watching some mindless TV. There's some great content on mindless TV. Entertainment, and some of it is even educational. Now, so that does not mean that we're going to do what the typical American adult does, which watch 6.5 hours of TV a day, or we can't graduate to what our children do, which are online 8-10 hours a day. Now, that is not mindless; that's just mind numbing. So, I think you need to use one of our recent favorite words, silo. We need to silo those things. Start with all of you watching, listening. Nathaniel, I did a great talk on technology, the new amphetamine. Now, technology is, in fact, an amphetamine. The astounding part where people I know spend enormous time on Instagram. Now, there's some really cool stuff on Instagram. There's some cool-looking people. There's some really cool-looking people doing cool-looking things. And there are some really, really exceptionally annoying people do things that are so annoying that you're captivated. You know, it's kind of like the banana peel thing. You know, the banana peel theory. Why do people – there's a banana peel on the street and people stare at it with anticipation that someone will slip on it. And when they slip on it and crack their back, everyone laughs. Why are you laughing? Because it didn't happen to me. That's the psychological point of the banana peel. But, a lot of stuff is happening on the Instagrams or TikTok of the world. It's just a massive banana peel where everybody's laughing at somebody doing something either insipid or something they themselves would love to do, but they would never do. Now, the detox part, and the focus is on people who are working, management people, for example, supervisory people, people who should be achievers. Digress to something I said 15 years ago, where I said, in my humble opinion, social media is a cancer of the intellect. Now, and I want to repeat this because I just rejoice repeating it. I've been aware of social media since the beginning of time. I was in a room when Twitter was created. No clue what it was. Still don't understand it, but there's value. Now, Facebook. I was in the first, among the first, I don't know, 10, 20, 30 people who tried to buy advertising on Facebook. So we had some insight. Interestingly enough, somebody asked me a couple of years ago, quite recently actually, do I not have a Facebook account? Oh, by the way, anybody who tells me they want to connect with me on Facebook and become friends, I lose their phone number. My definition of friendship is not that you and I have Facebook accounts and we become Facebook friends, because Nathaniel Schooler, for all of you listening, can buy himself a 500,000 friends by the time you all have dinner. For an amount of money that's remarkably little, you and I can buy 500,000 friends. Think of how important we're going to be when we have 500,000 friends, of whom we know one. Anyway, back to my little story. I said, I must have Facebook accounts, but hell, I haven't looked in 25 years. So, Steve, you have an account. So I went to the account to find out that I was blocked. I said, how can I be blocked from an account I've never used that I didn't know existed? Staff created it, part of our marketing work. And I pursued it to the extent which I found out that I was blocked because I stated 15 years ago that social media is a cancer of the intellect. I concluded that I must be very important, and two, those people do not have a sense of humor. Now, the reason I go through this somewhat convoluted thing is that one of the things that most toxic in a course of someone's day is social media. I don't understand smart, successful people who have to get their thrills and body of knowledge that they can share from things on Instagram. I don't understand getting an email that says, hey, I reached out to you on Facebook. Can you respond? I'm a little confused. I've gotten many of those. Did you just send me an email to tell me I should respond to you on Facebook?
It's odd, isn't it?
Now, when I get a message on things like LinkedIn, for example, which I do, you know, our next business, Nathaniel, is to figure out how to monetize the promises of riches that I get on Facebook. Every day, three or four people will tell me they're going to make me wealthier beyond belief. I'm going to make millions, perhaps billions, maybe even more, just by engaging with them. Every once in a while, one out of 100, if someone reaches out because it's a commonality of interest. And my third sentence is love to connect. Let me know your commonality of interest, competencies. I prefer to conduct our relationship on email or by telephone.
That's good.
When I read the third time, I say, this just ain't my kind of a person. Let's move on. I am astounded by people who don't reclaim valuable time and energy at the most opportune or necessary times because of fascination with technology. I will share this again very quickly. I was advising a company that was going through a very contentious merger, acquisition, disgruntled stockholders lawsuits, too many lawyers, too many banks, everyone is going to drown everyone else in a teaspoonful of spit. It's awful. So I finally had to go and sit in a big conference room with all these people because I became the activist and disgruntled board member. Enough already. And you go in a room with all these really cool people. And again, my condition was that I'd be the first to speak for half an hour. So you can't accomplish anything with 23 people talking. Everybody's billing $2,000 an hour. How are you going to get anything done? And my point, from the get-go, I said, I looked at our lawyer. I said, if you look at that phone one more time, I will take it away from you. But what we pay you? Well, I did. 10, 15 minutes into it, I confess. Dunked it in a glass of Diet Coke. And then I said to the number two person, next time you look at your laptop, I'll take it away from you. Well, if you don't retain what I say, what he or she says, you need to take notes on your laptop. Well, I did take it, throw it across the room in the trash can. The meeting became very efficient. Everyone's paying attention because I discovered that there were six people in that room, open laptops. They're communicating on instant messaging between themselves, subverting the meeting. You're going to say that? No, what do you think? Seriously? Now, the amazing part is that, and I'll stop talking in a moment. The thing that troubles me the most about the technology that is usurping our world, it's not that we must have it. That genie ain't going back to the bottle no more. AI, we've been in an AI world for 40 years. That's not going away. In fact, it's just hyper-accelerating. Yes, let's use AI for all the great benefits it can offer, the great progress it can engender. Let's not use it to subvert our own intellect beyond just adding to it. Let's not use that to destroy our creativity. Give me a tool. Give me a better tool so I can be more creative, but don't substitute your judgment for mine. But it's astounding that you have in people who have real value. We talk about the 1%ers. The 1%er can really connect all the dots. Those are people, powerful people in business, in personal lives. And then they sit there and they do what they do, what got them to that success. And now they become paralyzed. Bob, you took this when you borrowed $500 from your uncle, and now your company is doing, what's the valuation company? $14 billion. And you stop in the middle of the sentence and look up a better word to use, like you can't communicate that. One of the great, great destructive things AI has brought to us is that is people use it to communicate. The day I need AI to tell me how to tell you that I like you, or you told me something of value, Nathaniel, or we can't do this for this reason, that's the day I'm going to grow a very long beard, move to Pavuvu, and learn to drink umbrella drinks. Because
where's,
that's just not
Pavuvu?
Right. Not the great,
where's
Pavuvu? Mind.
Is that Hawaii?
No. For many years, I thought Pavuvu was something that my friend Kevin Arona made up. Kevin was one of the most bleeding-edge, brilliant humans that ever lived. And everyone should say, Stephen, we're going to just go to Pavuvu, sit on the beach, wear grass skirts, get really fat, and drink umbrella drinks. Enough of this. Of course, it would not take a whole lot of drinks for it to make my friend Kevin fat and me fat. We were rather really large people anyway. So one day I said, where the Pavuvu? He made that up. No, Pavuvu is an island in the Pacific. It does exist. But then for the first 20 years of my life in America, I thought Des Moines was something Jack Parr made up on the Tonight Show. I didn't think there was a city called Des Moines until I actually said, wait a minute. And I had to go there. I actually went to Des Moines, Iowa. Great city. Was. Not so much. But the core subject is, you need to reclaim that we should do well. I don't need, you know, there's no doubt in my mind that Gemini can feed me back three more different ways, better ways to say this. And it will give me the opportunity to evaluate what I was about to say as a tone, tenure, who you're writing to, what do you want this to sound like? Okay, there are your 5-6 options now. And you say, nah, I really want to be a little more contentious without really alienating the guy. Here you go. 6 options to be more contentious with an alien guy. And then Brock gets smart. Hey, listen, do I believe in the ability to do that stuff? Let's just say that I heard that Larry Ellison, Oracle, is now wealthier than Elon Musk. Just to stop. So I said, Elon needs my money. So I upgraded from Grok to Super Grok for $39 a month. You know why? I want to figure out what the difference is so I can complain. But the reality is that there are crossroads, there are Rubicons of knowledge, experiential stuff. I don't have the 6 hours to figure out why the Gordian knot is relevant. I know why it's relevant, but who created it? Super Grok told me it about minute. Now, there's value, but the day I allow all that technology to usurp my time entirely is the day I become creatively useless. I just do. There's sterility in technology. I don't mean it's boundless.
But it's interesting. Sterile. What you just said is very profound.
Sterile.
Well, I'm going to pull out the most important thing, I think, that you just said in the last 20 minutes, is that to reclaim your deep work, you need to do what you do really well. So you need to ignore everything else, and you need to focus on what has made you successful in the past so that you can continue to carry on that successful journey that you're on. And I think that's very profound. I think that concentrating on what you do really well and ignoring all the rest of it all, ignoring the Facebook notifications, turning your phone onto grayscale, which is what I've done. It was very boring in the beginning. It's still quite boring, but I've changed it now. It's now on sort of halfway in the middle. So I've got like color filter on my phone. Instead of having it completely gray, because it was just too miserable. It was my brain. I did it for 4 days, 4.5 days, right? And I was like, okay, this is really boring. And it definitely reduced the amount of times I picked my phone up. It reduced the interest I had in my phone. But then I was like, it's slightly too much. So then I adjusted the filters. And I think maybe my filter is still slightly too much color. I might go down a little bit on the color to see if that helps. But I do think that reclaiming deep work is a crucial thing for success. And you know, if you can't do that, then basically you're being manipulated by all the app designers, by social media platforms, by your mobile phone designers, by anything that comes your way that you can't say no to, you're basically being manipulated by. And
I think the word to the wise here, Nathaniel, is, again, without a doubt, the benefit of technology is phenomenal. It just is. And I focus on the cerebral stuff, the stuff we learn, the stuff we need to do to get better at what we do. The word to the wise is, a lot of that stuff is fantastic, however superficial. Yeah. It's very specific to that moment in time where you express your interest and how you express it. Okay. You can push it to levels, push it to more levels, and it gets more and more empirical. That what's missing, and we talk about this a great deal, the visceral part is missing. Now, it's a funny thing, and this is real. I was listening to a great interview by really brilliant tech guy in Hungary, at the University of something in Hungary. And he was talking about the, and he really became granular with it. And I experimented with that as well, as the reaction of the bots, the reaction of your AI to the tone of your voice. So when I could click right now and go to Grok or Copilot or Gemini, whatever, hi, Stephen, what's on your mind today? Now, I know that if Bob over here does the same thing, he'll say, good morning, Bob. How can I help you? Now, that is qualitatively very different. I trained that dragon by being friendly. And I learned that from this Hungarian dude a while ago. He said, just look at it differently. And I'm telling you that, and I just say this to you all the time. Yo, you're talking to a computer. Not talking to Mary Ellen in Wichita Falls, Kansas. You're talking to a computer. Okay. Meanwhile, the great brains that do all this, hey, good morning, Grunt. How are things in Musqueam? Now, I can then go beyond that and ask friendly questions. I'm pondering on this. What do you think? And I, when I type that, I'm saying to myself, you're phony. I preach against that. Now, that's it. The quality or I get back is fundamentally different. Go figure. Now, no, I do not want any of those things, technology, speaking of doing deep work. I don't want it to substitute its thinking for mine. Qualitatively, I don't. Quantitatively, sometimes it's a very good thing. Give me the seven reasons why wallabies mate better in Australia instead of New Zealand.
The weather okay, in New now, Zealand sucks.
Will that come up in your
the
life?
Definitely, it sucks.
Never know. Never know. But the bottom line is, yeah, turn mm-hmm. the thing off. Surround yourself with some really smart and challenging people. And I preach this every day. When you put two or three really smart people in a room, amazing stuff happens. But let's be clear. It's the old story where all the breeders of racehorses in the world said, there's a lot of technology now. Let's put the brains together. We'll come up with a faster racehorse. And sure, they put together five best technologists and five best breeders and the five best econ guys and the five best statistician. Put them in a room and say, okay, go ahead. Here's your mandate. And man, they didn't hear from them for 10 days. At the end of 10 days, they came out triumphantly. They had a triumph. They created the most water-retentive camel in the history of the world. Now, you and I have been through that in real business terms, where you have a client who is really focused on accomplishing this. They believe it's an absolute extension of their business, a must-do. And once you begin to dig in that, ask enough questions, and you divorce them from the rails they're on, you find out that there are a lot of things in there that are much more compelling. That's deep work. I mean, every tool they have, the immense data they have, the immense data analytics they have, the brilliant brain they have, all do this. This is what we should do, this is what we should not do. And the most amazing thing to be in a room with the 22 Harvard and Sorbonne and Oxford MBAs, who all conclude this is the way we should do it. And this is something we shouldn't do. And then you have an owner, an entrepreneur who said, nah, I kind of like it the other way. All the data suggests that's what we need to do. And then the owner said, nah, I really want to do that. And then he goes and does it against all good advice. When it succeeds, you have 23 people saying, we did a great job. Well, he's the guy or the woman that's doing the deep thinking, it's not going to be swayed by too much data that may be tangential. Of course, the smart leader will recognize that, well, you can't drink from the bottle if it's empty. Because they tell me it's empty. Okay, the smart leader may be the only one in the room who will say, I'm going to figure out a way to always have a bottle of water on my desk rather than an empty bottle. Anyway, that's a weak parallel, but the point is reclaiming quality of work. The question that would do humility, one of the questions I ask too often in consultative world is hours, days, interviews, stop. We need to digress to simple, what exactly are we doing here? What is our raison d'etre? We're splitting an atom because we can do it better. No, we're here because we have an obligation to ourselves and our stockholders. We have to make money. That's why we're here. Well, think about if we have, no. Our reasons for existence is to not come up with an incredible triumphant statistical anything. It's to make more money. Now, some people think it's, it's funny, the fine line between love and hate. The fine line between really deep thinking and deep work. And that is so ordinary, why didn't I think of it? That happens every day. That is so ordinary. Why that? Okay, well, if it's ordinary, well, how come there are 7 billion of us that haven't thought of it yet? And when somebody does, everyone says, oh, of course, that makes sense.
But that makes a lot of sense. When you remember why you started something, what you're there for, like, why are you doing it? Like, all of these things are super important, but sometimes life just throws a curveball, right? I mean, in today's Monday Influencer, we had a message. What did you write in there, Steve, about life just happens? You know, you make plans and then God has other plans for you, right?
Well, it's Woody Allen who said, when you make plans, God laughs.
Yeah.
Life happens when your plans go awry. I mean, there's some really smart people. If you don't make plans, when you get there, how do you know you're there? There's a whole lot of, but Woody Allen was brilliant at that when he said, hey, when you make plans, God laughs. And of course, Mike Tyson had another great line. Plans are great until you get punched in the face.
Absolutely. And it's so true, right? But I think a lot of these things refocus us onto what we're doing. And if you want to go back, check out our other episodes. We talked a lot about this specific topic of focusing, getting more done. And this is the number 9 in that series of 10 episodes. And we've had some amazing conversations there. So I suggest you go back, listen to those. And if you're still here, you're still listening, do subscribe to our channel or podcast channel if you're listening there. And make sure that you go to MondayInfluencer.com and you can grab a link to that or just visit MondayInfluencer.com and you can get more really good educational content and help us to provide for the hungry children, because 20% of our income goes to hungry children. So yeah, we're really excited about that. And thank you, Steve. Always enjoy it. Always.
Thank you, Nathaniel. Thanks. Pleasure always.
Thanks very much for listening to Influential Visions. Please make sure you share this episode with your friends and business connections. And don't forget to drop us a review wherever you listen. Thanks.